The ravenous lion stared at its prey. The surprise-designated victim, Hermann Grün, remained in a state of shock. The mayor of Cologne had fallen into a deadly trap in the center of Cologne. Would he get out of it alive? Mayor Hermann Grün's fight with the lion. That's what we will talk about in this episode. How it came about, how this duel ended, and of course, the most important question, what is true about it? The year is 1262, the beginning of June. It has been a bloody year in Cologne. The city's supreme ruler, Archbishop Engelbert II von Falkenburg, had had all the towers of Cologne city wall occupied by his troops, contrary to the law. The citizens of Cologne did not take this lying down, and on 8 June forcibly recaptured the city wall along with its towers and gates, and whoever ruled the city wall in Cologne ruled the city. The Archbishop was thus driven out of the city again for the time being. Nevertheless, this left the city in uncertain limbo for a short time. The Archbishop was only physically expelled, but not his power over the city. This is what we will learn in today's story. The following legendary story is said to have taken place during the period of limbo just as described in June 1262. At that time, in June 1262, a man named Hermann Grün lived in Cologne. Hermann was a mayor of the city. A quick refresher for you guys. At that time, a mayor was something quite different from what it is today in Cologne. There was not just one mayor, but two. And they were not mayors of the city of Cologne, elected by the city council here in the middle of the 13th century, but they were each the two leaders of the Riecherzeche, the Brotherhood of the Rich, a now exclusive club made up of rich merchants, ministerials, and above all, the jurors of the city. The Riecherzeche was a purely civil body, outside the control of the Archbishop of Cologne, the Lord of the city, a body that was probably largely responsible for the fact that the Archbishop's power was so violently challenged here in June 1262, with Hermann Grün as one of the leaders on the side of the city of Cologne. At least two canons, so two members of the Cologne Cathedral chapter, were of this opinion that Hermann Grün was the cause that their leader, their archbishop, was driven out of the city. They were furious with these rich citizens of Cologne in general who were fighting against their archbishop. After all, as the former provost of the cathedral, Engelbert himself came from the center of the Cologne Cathedral chapter, as these two guys here. Hermann Grün had been particularly vocal in his opposition to Archbishop Engelbert of Falkenburg. What a wonder, since he was one of the mayors of the Riecherzeche, which had turned against the archbishop with violence, and insisted on the rights of the citizens of Cologne, or rather his rights and his rich friends. For let us remember, this had been massively restricted since Conrad von Hochstaden, the industrious Dominican monk Albertus Magnus, who was extremely keen on balancing all interests, had actually created a good balance in 1258 with the Great Arbitration, which was face-saving for the citizens and the archbishop. But just 1 year later, Archbishop Conrad von Hochstaden had seized power by force, expelling and imprisoning the Cologne patricians or other families. His successors from 1261 onwards, Engelbert von Falkenburg, had first promised a relaxation and then overstepped the mark even further. This caused the violent events from two episodes ago. But now back to the story of Hermann Grün. A leading man among the citizens of Cologne and an opponent of the archbishop, who had a bad time with the two canons. They, the two canons, became mutually enraged by their hatred of the mayor, a hatred that they concealed from all outsiders and skillfully devised a plan, a trap rather. And now, dear people, it's getting wild. Please don't ask me how, but these two canons managed to find a lion. As I said, don't ask me how, they found a line in medieval Germany. Was it already in the possession of the recently expelled archbishop and chilling out in a cage in the episcopal palace by the cathedral? Be that as it may, the two canons now had a lion, and from then on kept it in a courtyard in their residential buildings in the cathedral monastery. Over the next few days, the people of Cologne flocked to a cathedral monastery. They all wanted to see the lion, of course, from a safe distance from windows on the upper floors. How often do you get to see a lion alive, live, and in color? Certainly less often back then than today. And so it was that Hermann Grin was told by his friends what kind of animal was living in the cathedral monastery, and that he absolutely had to see it. It was so majestic, so impressive, so cool. But Hermann Grin hesitated for the next few days, because in the end, he wasn't completely stupid either. Even though the two canons, whose names we don't know by the way, did their best to hide their resentment and disgust towards the mayor. But they probably couldn't hide it very skillfully. People who hate me have a lion, good for them, but I'm still not going there. That's what Hermann Grin thought. The canons also became uneasy that their plan, their trap, would not succeed, so they did something very nasty. They told Hermann Grin that they really, indeed, did harbor grudge against him. But wasn't it time to bury the hatchet? It's an old hat, come on man, let's chill out and hang together. And what's the best way to make up? Over a delicious meal, of course, to which the two canons invited Hermann Grin. Where? In their house in the cathedral monastery, of course. And really, the three of them chatted enthusiastically, laughed and joked, and ate together. And when Hermann once again managed to get them to laugh together, they laughed so loudly that the lion in a neighboring courtyard heard them and roared out loudly as well, disturbed by the noise upstairs. When the mayor heard this, his curiosity was aroused and the atmosphere was relaxed and peaceful anyway, wasn't it? So why not take a look at the big cat? Oh dear. The two canons enthusiastically agreed to Hermann's request. All three got up from the table, wiped their mouths, and quickly washed their hands. They walked through a corridor to a large window front, which the two canons opened to reveal a view of the inner courtyard. Hermann looked down and was amazed. It was a huge cat, or rather tomcat, with a big mane. But even though the mayor had only ever known cats of smaller caliber in the form of ordinary house cats, he recognized the look in the lion's eyes. The animal was hungry, and not just since today, it had been hungry for days. But today the lion was going to get its food, and it also dawned on Hermann what, or rather who, the food for the big cat was supposed to be. In a flash, the skilled fighter Hermann turned around to the canons, ready to attack. But the two canons had the element of surprise on their side, and they were a little bit quicker. Before Hermann had turned around, they had already pushed him in the back, and the unfortunate mayor fell one floor down into the courtyard, where the lion had been waiting hungrily for his meal. Hermann landed roughly on the floor on the courtyard. Quick-witted and certainly full of adrenaline, he picked himself up and ran straight to the gate of the inner courtyard. But it was, what a surprise, closed. It was firmly locked from the other side. So the trap had been sprung. But the mayor wasn't just anyone. In the days and weeks before, he himself had fought against the archbishop's troops in Cologne to recapture the city walls, and as a man of high standing, despite the warm summer months, he carried a white coat and, better safe than sorry, a long dagger as well. With the instinct of a battle-hardened warrior, Hermann Grin tore the cloak from his body and wrapped it around his left arm as more bad than good protection. Still, it was better than nothing against the lion's sharp teeth. He held his long dagger ready in his right hand. The animal leapt forward, its mouth open. Hermann leapt to the side and rammed his left arm wrapped in his coat into the lion's mouth. A nasty pain shot through him as the animal's teeth dug into his left arm despite the coat. But that was exactly what the mayor had done on purpose. His left arm served as a distraction. At the same time, he plunged the long dagger in his right into the lion's chest with his free hand. In sheer pain, the lion lets go of his left arm. Again and again, as if in a deadly round dance, the two opponents circled each other. One snapped with his mouth and struck with his paws, the other stabbed back with his dagger. This went on for quite a while, but the more experienced fighter of the two won. Hermann Grimm had won. The poor starving animal lay dead on the floor of the courtyard with numerous cuts and stab wounds, but the mayor also looked pretty battered. The fight had made a big turmoil. The surrounding shutters to the inner courtyard had been and were still being torn open, and servants and other canons looked on in horror at the scene that had just taken place in the courtyard. But Hermann paid no attention to most of the onlookers, not even a little. He only looked at the two canons who, in violation of hospitality, had brought him to his supposed end here.
"You there," roared the mayor. "I'm going to get you."
The two canons had turned white as chalk and immediately turned around. Full of rage, Hammond saw them both disappear from the window. Fortunately, the previously locked gate to the inner courtyard was finally opened from the other side. Hammond immediately stormed off, but his injuries and the pain they caused prevented him from giving chase. The canons ran across the cathedral courtyard. They knew that they had to get out of the city as quickly as possible. The old Roman north gate was still standing. If they managed to get through here, they could try to leave the city by land via the Eigelstein gate or perhaps on a fishing boat at St. Kunibert. Shouldn't be a problem for the two canons. But there was a traffic jam at the Roman north gate, right there and then. The two canons hurriedly tried to squeeze past the people waiting. And of course the people waiting didn't find this funny at all, and fierce argument broke out. That was the time window that the injured hammer needed to catch up with the two canons. What a scene that must have been. The wounded mayor, well known in the community, with his left arm wrapped in his coat, which was soaked in his own blood and the blood of the lion, of course. His right hand still held his drawn long dagger, also soaked in the lion's blood. Then everything happened rather quickly. When the bystanders heard what had happened, it didn't take long for numerous hands to grab the two canons. In normal times, the canons would have been brought before the Archbishop's court, the High Court, which could only try such serious offenses as this dastardly attempt, murder, and could therefore even hand down death sentences. And as the canons were allies of the Archbishop, surely they could hope for mercy from the city lord, right? But the Archbishop was currently unavailable, having just been expelled by force from the city, and the surrounding crowd here at the Roman North Gate was less interested in such things as constitutional issues at the moment of excitement. There was no constitution at all, so to speak, in a modern sense, so to speak. For here two canons, these two priests, had allowed their mayor to be almost mauled by a lion. An attack on the mayor? It was an attack on all the citizens of Cologne. If the Archbishop was already attacking the highest people of Cologne society, then surely no one was safe in the city. On the same day, the two captured canons were judged. As the sun went down, they both dangled from the Roman North Gate, hanged and dead. Within sight of Cologne Cathedral and in the equally close sight of the Archbishop's palace, even though the latter was not present in the city at that time, the citizens sent a clear signal that they would not dare to question or attack the civil city government again. So ends this legendary story. A mayor of the Richardszechu, who is lured into a trap by two canons and has to fight a real lion and barely survives. The two canons, no doubt of high nobility, like almost all members of the cathedral chapter, are hanged at the Roman North Gate of the cathedral. This story sounds epic. Perhaps too epic. Well, as I said at the beginning, it's a legend, and yet after a little research, I was surprised to find that, as it is typical of Cologne, there was more to it than meets the eye. Let's take a look how the story was handed down, which is said to have taken place in the summer of 1262. We first read about Hermann Grimm's battle in historical sources at the end of the 14th century, in the yearbooks of the city of Cologne. There it reads, quote, "When Bishop Engelbert became bishop, he had a lion. Two priests held it so that Mr. Hermann Grimm would be torn apart by it. But the same Mr. Hermann stabbed the lion, and the two priests in question were hanged at the Pfaffenpforten, the priest's gate. And that is why the gate is still called the priest's gate today." End quote. Here we have an important clue. In 14th century Cologne, the story was already so widespread that the Roman North Gate was in fact called the priest's gate, or in German, Pfaffenpforte. Because according to tradition, this is where the two canons were hanged after their failed murder plot. Nevertheless, this is only a brief description of the whole event. It becomes more detailed in 1499 when the Kollhöfsche Chronicle takes up the story and describes it in more detail. There, it is told in as much detail as I have done here. And, well, have you never heard of the Kollhöfsche Chronik? Well, the Kollhöfsche Chronik was printed in 1499 by Johann Kollhoff the Younger and is one of the earliest printed city chronicles of Cologne. It tells the history of the city from antiquity to the 15th century in Middle Low German. In addition to historical accounts, the chronicle also contains legendary stories and urban lore. It is considered an important but not always reliable source for the medieval self-perception of Cologne. Nevertheless, it is an interesting historical source, and I hope it will soon be available to buy again in a reprint and, above all, annotated and in color. I once received a second-hand reprint in black and white, sadly only in black and white, but for anyone who finds Cologne and its history interesting, I can only recommend that you take a look. You can also find a lot of it online, especially paintings of it, the paintings inside the book. But back to the story of Hermann Grimm and the lion, because his story was not only written down, but also depicted. In 1573, a depiction of the lion's battle was carved in stone on the entrance arbor on the upper floor of Cologne's city hall. While the city hall was almost completely destroyed by bombs during the Second World War, the city hall arbor at the entrance survived the war almost unscathed. And so, this arbor has survived to this day. I will, of course, make a photo of it, available on the homepage thehistoryofcologne.com, but not exactly the day when the episode comes out, a few days later. Sorry for that. Of course, the story never happened that way, Hermann Grimm fighting a lion, but it was an integral part of the story of how the city gradually rebelled against the archbishop. The rich citizens at the top, in particular, made use of this story. But why did the story have to include a lion fight? Quite simply, because the story was inspired by then well-known literary sources. Heracles, the ancient hero, was the first to have to stand his ground against the Nemean lion in his 12 trials. Even though antiquity was long gone, the stories of Heracles were all known back then, sometimes better known than today. As almost 100% of Cologne's population was Christian, a lion fight from the Bible was, of course, also an inspiration to create a Cologne version for the freedom of the city. Samson, a character from the Old Testament, also fought with a lion, even with many more disadvantages than our Hermann here in our story. Whilst traveling to see his bride, he lost his way and Samson encountered a lion. However, Samson had no cloak or dagger with him, but the then still young man was lucky because God was on his side, lent him his strength, and Samson effortlessly tore the lion apart like a sheet of paper with his bare hands. And also in the Old Testament, the young David has to stand up to a lion. The future king of Judah and Israel defends not just one, but several lions. And if that wasn't enough, he also defeats a few bears as well. As I said, these stories from antiquity and the Bible were all well known. We as a city like to use these templates and relate them to our own contemporary circumstances. The plan of salvation that God sets out for mankind in the Old Testament and then continues in the New Testament, according to Christian belief, is equated or at least placed on the same level as Cologne's struggle for freedom from archiepiscopal rule. But now the question that concerns us all. Is the story true? Not really, but also a little bit. Maybe a compromise is a good idea here, because the Grins, they really did exist. The patrician Grin family did indeed exist. There were several Hermann Grins documented and living in Cologne at the time of 1262. So why does the story exist? Unfortunately, I'm slightly preempting the history of the city, something I really don't want to spoil. But let's say it's that way. In the battle for control of the city between the patrician camps, which would soon take place, the Grins would side with the side that would lose the battle in the end. But unlike other families, however, they were not expelled from the city after the defeat, but remained in Cologne, alive but humiliated. The city scribe Gottfried Hagen even wrote insulting rhymes about the Grin family in his rhyming chronicle about the city. The historically documented Richwin Grin, so a member of the Grin family, was insulted to the extreme by the town clerk. As I said, I don't want to spoil it, and at the end of the 13th century, the Grin family is humiliated by their defeat and no longer held in high esteem. But for a patrician family at that time, that is almost the same as being dead. But how can they redeem themselves, the Grin family? How can they wash their name clean? Quite simply, according to historical research, by inventing an allegedly true story of a former relative who heroically fought for the freedom of the city against the archbishop, Hermann Grin. In this way, the spurned Richwin Grin was to be forgotten and replaced by another, more positively characterized ancestor. And to prove that, you come from a great, old and honorable family. Even the Grin family coat of arms bears witness to this. It shows three lion heads with their mouths open and tongues hanging out. This symbolizes, of course, the heroic deed that the ancestor of the family is said to have performed, even if it was actually only one lion and not three, but so be it. And, let's cut it short, the plan worked, because the Grin family skillfully used the story of the legendary ancestor Hermann Grin in the 14th century to fit the spirit of the times like a glove. Cologne was once again fighting for its freedoms against the archbishop. The story of the heroic Cologne mayor Hermann Grin came in handy for the city's own propaganda and self-image for that time. The legend of Hermann Grin thus became a perceived, lived, and experienced truth, part of the city's identity and culture of remembrance, as is often the case in Cologne, be it Ursula, Geryon, or even Hermann Grin. They probably did not exist, but were seen as some real persons. In the late Middle Ages and into the early modern period, Hermann Grin was regarded as a real person. The Roman Northgate was renamed Pfaffenpforte, so Priest's Gate, because it was firmly believed that the two canons were hanged here in 1262, according to the story. The story of Hermann Grin fitted imperfectly with the zeitgeist of the city of Cologne, which wanted to use this story to emphasize the steadfastness, fighting spirit, and above all, the desire for freedom of Cologne's citizens. The legend of Hermann Grin defeating a lion with nearly his bare hands, just a normal dagger, is more than just a heroic tale. It is a constructed image of memory that fulfilled a deeper political and social function. Originally, it seems to have arisen from the Grimm family's desire to overcome the ridicule and defeat of their ancestor, the real person, Richvin Grimm, in the urban battles of the 13th century between the patrician camps. By presenting Hermann as a valiant defender of the city against the archbishop, they turned a shameful family reputation into a source of pride and honor. The story was told and spread so effectively that Hermann Grimm became a permanent fixture in Cologne's collective memory, as a symbol of courage, resilience, and urban freedom. It fitted perfectly into the chivalrous self-image of Cologne's ruling classes and remained of central importance even after political upheavals. The lion fight itself, exaggerated in terms of content and all likelihood invented, served as a visible symbol of victory over an overpowering threat, inspired by ancient texts and passages from the Old Testament of the Bible. The legend thus became a powerful symbol of identity, not just for one family, but ultimately for the entire city. Many thanks this time to Georg, Antje, Andreas, Christian, Ruf, Thomas, Sylvia, Christoph, Friedrich, Oliver, Tanja, Norbert, Antje, Christian, for your donations via PayPal. What did I use as literature? Above all, Goswin Peter Garve's Kölner Sagen, so Cologne legends, as well as for special historical and above all scientific research, Markus Janssens Die Stadt der Ritter, kriegerische Habitusform der Elite der spätmittelalterlichen Stadt Köln. In English, The City of Knights, Forms of Warrior Behavior Among the Elite of the Late Medieval City of Cologne. Thank you very much for listening. Recommend me further, rate this podcast wherever you like to rate this podcast, and maybe if you would like to, and if you're in Cologne the next few days or maybe forever, check out my GPS voice map tour through Roman Cologne. I think the link is also in the show notes. Have fun, stay safe, stay healthy, and as always, auf Wiedersehen.